Hello and welcome to the GearYourGirl.com official podcast, episode 32, catching up with Rob Langdon, author of The Seventh Circle. I'm your host, Adrienne Harvey. This week's episode features a conversation with Rob Langdon, author of The Seventh Circle, a former Australian soldier's extraordinary story of surviving 7 years in Afghanistan's most notorious prison. I interviewed him for Dragon Door, and this episode features a conversation that expands on the interview and some of our favorite random topics. This episode also includes upcoming events, the question of the week, workout tip of the week, a book of the week, and of course, some extra surprises. Upcoming events. Be sure to sign up for the November 16th and 17th Hardstyle Kettlebell Certification and Strength Calisthenics Certification happening in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Master RKC and good friend of many years Michael Krivka will be leading the HKC, and I'll be teaching the SCC the next day. Level up your skills as a fitness professional or exercise enthusiast on this one special weekend. Now, there's two upcoming events this weekend, and there's still time to sign up for both. On Saturday, August 17th at noon, be sure to check out the Vintage Strength Training Games happening at The Shop Gym in Manassas, Virginia. This first-of-its-kind event will feature competitions with the Mace and Club. People of all experience levels are invited to participate, compete, and/or learn. Find out more about the event by searching for Vintage Strength Training Games on Facebook or visiting the MaceWorks, and that's spelled MaceWorks.com website. I hear there's also going to be a live stream available, so be sure to find out all about that before this weekend if you are not able to attend in person. Also on this Saturday, August 17th, Systema instructor Glenn Murphy is leading a seminar entitled Against Tension this weekend at NC Systema in Durham, North Carolina. This 4-hour seminar is focused on positioning, biomechanics, and the development of internal power in order to work against strong, tough, powerful opponents. Visit ncsystema.com or the link in the show notes to find out more and to sign up. You can also visit ncsystema.com for more information about local classes and strength and conditioning with me on Tuesdays and Fridays, or Systema self-defense and other specialized topics with Systema HQ certified instructors here in Durham, North Carolina. They're always adding awesome workshops and events to their calendar, so check it out now. Question of the week. How do I add get-ups to my workouts? This past weekend, I led a 4-hour intensive, and I mean intensive, seminar on the kettlebell get-up. And one of the many ideas we discussed was how to add get-ups to our workouts and programming. I'll add some of the ideas here, but if you would like a copy of the PDF handout from the workshop, please email info@giryagirl.com. That's info@giryagirl.com. In the meantime, here's how I like to add get-ups to my workouts and for my clients' workouts. First off, timed practice. I set a timer for 3 minutes or 5 minutes of practice time with alternating get-ups with either a light kettlebell or no weight. This is a great thing you can do even while traveling. You can also make a lightweight very heavy with timed practice. Stay on one side with one kettlebell and challenge yourself to not put it down for a set time of, say, 2 to 5 minutes. Much longer than that, and your hand is going to get cold and turn a funny color. You can also get a fast full body workout by setting a timer for 10 minutes of practice time and do get-ups with a moderate weight kettlebell, you know, for you, whatever that might be, or even a dumbbell if you're traveling. Now, be sure to choose a light dumbbell at first. It's got a different center of balance, and you want to get used to it before you go heavy. But setting that timer for 10 minutes and just practicing get-ups, one on the right, one on the left, one on the right, one on the left, for that 10 minutes is time very well spent. Other ideas, you can work parts of the get-up as individual exercises for reps. For instance, that very first part of the get-up, sometimes called the get-up sit-up, should be more of a roll-up, but we talked about that. Getting the kettlebell and yourself from the ground, roll to the elbow, and getting into that tall sit position. Then back down, and back down to the ground. Repeat that a few times. That'll wake you up, I promise. You can also practice the half-kneeling windmill and hinge from the ground to upright and back to the ground. And that is a great way to practice that intricate piece of the movement. And of course, you can always do lunges with that kettlebell overhead. Practicing each of those parts of the getup, and sometimes the transitions between those parts, can be an incredibly great use of time. If you want to make your get-ups a little bit more difficult, you can always add short sets of presses to various points of the get-up. Obviously, floor presses are a shoe-in. You can also do presses from the tall sit if you have the shoulder mobility for it, from the upright portion of the kneeling windmill, so basically you're in a kneeling position, and of course while standing. You can also perform the get-up, but pause and make sure that you can turn your head at safe intervals. This can really point out some mobility problems that you may not have known that you had. Again, be very careful. Do not turn your head into pain and observe what's happening with your body. You can also do a short set of light get-ups at the beginning of any warm-up circuit. Something I love to do is a series of get-ups with three progressively heavier kettlebells. So the first set of kettlebells, I may choose to use a lighter kettlebell, like a 12 kilo. Then the next time I'll do one on the right and the left with a 16 kilo. And then I might move up to like a 20 kilo. And maybe I'll go back down. But it's fun to do a pyramid with these sizes. Now, I will only do this with sizes I'm pretty comfortable with. This is not the time to set a PR because I'm already a little bit fatigued by the time I get to the heaviest one. You can always add get-ups to the first part of a circuit. That's a favorite of mine. And then if all else fails, you can even set a rep goal for the session or for the entire day. I've been known to do things like 20 get-ups in the day with, you know, a light weight, and just kind of throughout the day, almost GTG, grease the groove style. Do you have a question? Call our question line at 321-316-3533 and leave a message with your question about kettlebells, calisthenics, food, workouts, and more. Leave your name for fame or feel free to remain anonymous. Again, call our question line at 321-316-3533. Do you want to support this and other projects and continue to get free workouts and more? Then visit GearYourGirl.com or our new easier to spell address, KettlebellsOfficial.com, to keep up with all the new upcoming events and more. You'll support this podcast and the website when you use any of the links to purchase items like kettlebells, workshop registrations, books, and more. This is how you can support the site and the continued production of more podcasts, workouts, blog posts, videos, and more. Likewise, if you have a relevant product or business and would like to work out a more formal sponsorship, call 321-316-3533 and leave a message. Please be advised that there are very limited placements available. And now for a chat with Rob Langdon, author of The Seventh Circle, a former Australian soldier's extraordinary story of surviving 7 years in Afghanistan's most notorious prison. Be sure to check out the show notes for the interview I conducted with him for Dragon Door. The interview is titled Kettlebells and Convict Conditioning in an Afghan Prison. We not only talk about the interview and some of his experiences, but we get into some other topics that both of us enjoy. What really kind of pushed you to, you know, write the book of your account of what happened?
It was mainly just to set the record straight, because I just didn't talk to anyone in there. I refused to talk to any of the media because just how things are.
Right.
People, one, it wouldn't have made any better for me inside. Mm-hmm. Two, people only sort of take what they want to from things, or, and that goes from a lot of media reporters as well. So, you know, they want to pursue an angle on a story, and you know, it's generally wrong. And so I just went, I'm not just going to talk to anyone, and just left it at that. And and it worked out pretty well in the end. It's sort of like my final say on the whole thing. That's how I saw the whole thing, and that's my take on it. So I can't really offer much more than that to people. So.
Yeah. No, you know, what was interesting that you mentioned, like taking the different angles, several times when I was reading the book, I kind of identified, I'm like, oh man, you know, if that was said in an interview outside of the context of the entire book, I can see how a journalist would pursue that angle in an unproductive way, you know?
Yeah.
It's
a funny thing considering, you know, working around war zones the last 15 odd years or so, I have, you get pretty cozy with a lot of a lot of journalists and sometimes friends. I've got several journalists that I consider my friends, and the so much so is that they had easy access to me. One in particular, because she was going out with a friend of mine who's in the book, and she was a freelance French journalist, and she never ever said anything or used our relationship professionally. She just, she said, "That's off the books. That's what I'll get shit for you. I'll help you out, but I'm not going to stab you in the back."
Oh, that's good.
So, yeah.
Ah. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of good ones out there, but I think the issue with, you know, that I was seeing more is that it's such a complicated situation. You know, not only in terms of what happened, but also politically and, you know, in the larger context. But it was the book really opened my eyes as to, you know, a lot of what goes on. I've always had my suspicions, being a pessimist. I mean, realist, I mean, whatever. But, you know, I think it was a really... If someone comes to your book with an open mind, there's a lot to kind of learn and observe. That was something that I genuinely enjoyed and was not necessarily expecting to gain from the book. So
it's a thing, because, you know, when I was younger, that's books like that are sort of like they get passed around a lot in the military. It's like, you read this one yet? You know, I still do once in a while read something like that if it's someone I know or something I find interesting. With the people I worked with when I was doing it, I really wanted to put a spin it a bit so people actually get something out of it. But I had to, some of the language in that I had to use, I had to think about how I was when I was a young 20-year-old soldier in the army, and that was sort of the only frame of reference for an audience I could sort of, okay, this is the book, the 20-year-old me would have liked to have read. That's how it went for it. And but I said, at the same token, I am fairly well read, and I wanted to put something else in there just to say people go and pursue maybe other things if the interest so hits them, you know.
I really enjoyed that, especially, you know, just talking about some of the other people that you met in prison and understanding kind of, you know, how they got there, why they got there. Some were good, some were bad. And then, you know, some were just trying to get money to build a school. And that's why they were smuggling. It's like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It's a funny thing. You know, a lot of people, especially on your side, they confuse empathy with sympathy. It's not the same thing. To truly understand where people are coming from, you have to have empathy. It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. You know, Once you do that, you can understand the problem. You can understand what drives them, and you can use that to make your situation better or everyone's situation better, you know, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But, it's just, you see a lot now. I mean, especially with the way social media is, they read, but they're not taking it in. They're reading the words, but they're not understanding the meaning. And that's essentially the same thing, you know. And I think, you know, people just took 5 seconds after they've read something before going on a Twitter war, you know, the world would be a better place.
Yeah. And what's interesting about that too is that, unfortunately, a lot of the systems of social media seem to reward the wars, the Twitter wars and whatnot, just in terms of the algorithm. And it's an interesting problem to solve. It's like, well, okay, how do we maintain a viable platform that, you know, people are engaged with without rewarding hostility, basically?
That's sort of more your end of the stick than mine. I get it because to me it reeks sort of the same way. So like the Fleet Street tabloids in the UK back in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a similar sort of thing. Sales are driven by sensationalism. You know, it's essentially the same thing with some of these social media platforms now. Mm-hmm. You get more hits if something is particularly inflammatory,
right?
And therefore the advertising quotas go up. You know, it's the same thing. It's essentially exactly the same.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'm glad to hear that someone else has made the connection of sensationalist tabloid material and, you know, what ends up blowing up on social media. It's like, oh, have we really not moved past our baser instincts? And, well,
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, it's a bit like that.
All right, tangent one. Yes, excellent. So a little background for everybody else. Whenever Rob and I talk, we really go on some crazy tangents. Not crazy tangents. It all makes sense to us, but we will get back to the original topic, I promise, eventually. So
eventually.
Yeah. Now in the book, I was really amazed at, so you know, you made your own kettlebells, you made your own weights with concrete on several occasions, it sounds like. What inspired you guys to, you know, to undertake building your own weights?
Well, a lot of it has to do is just passing the time. Yeah. You know, we need to train. So we run for a bit. We do lots of push-ups. And then we're like, okay, now we need, what if we made weights? What can we get our hands on to use? And you start. And it goes from there, you know. It's, and part of the process of acquiring the materials to do so is actually another thing, you know. It's another little project. You got something that takes up time. You go, okay, today we've got to do this, and off you go. You try. We've got to see this guy, and then this guy might be able to get us this, but it's going to cost us a bag of onions or whatever. You know, it just comes down to passing the time.
Okay,
and which is essentially a good thing in itself, because it's every second spent is one that you don't have to. You're 1 second closer to getting out. You know, so. You just keep moving forward, and yeah, it's better to have something to do or have something to work towards as opposed to just sitting around doing drinking tea, which is essentially what everybody else did.
Yeah, wow, that makes a lot of sense. You know, it's like, okay, we're going to set up this goal, this task, etc.
Yeah,
you've mentioned training a little bit on your Instagram recently. Have you gotten back into it regularly, or is it?
It's sort of kicked in a touch again because I've been working, and as I said to you before we started, there's been early mornings and late nights, and it's fitting in time. And I mean, some days not even just eating once a day because you're spending the rest of the time waiting around. You can't go anywhere.
Right.
Yeah. It's just how it is.
All right. Well, we'll check back in on you another couple of weeks.
Yeah. No. I got to sort it out.
You know, I have some videos out there.
Yeah. No, no, just,
yeah. It's too funny. Okay, cool. So, you know, again, speaking with the training, so I remember, you know, when we did your interview for Dragon Door, when, you know, CrossFit came around, none of you guys were surprised because, you know, you'd already been doing, like, let's take this log and carry it over the hill 20 times.
Yeah, it's and, you know, after what I said that to you, I was just looking because I like GORUCK stuff as well because of the guy involved. And it's just interesting now that it came in a while back, but now rucking is a part of the CrossFit Games.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, GORUCK got the sponsorship for it because they pretty much worked it out that, Jason McCarthy worked out a way to market carrying heavy stuff around on your back, which most people who have worn the uniform in their life going, really? People want to do that? Jesus. What? So, anyway, so it's just the mind boggles. It's just stuff that we've always known makes you fit and strong, but and if you can put a pack on your back, you can put 20, 30 kilo on your back and walk for 50 kilometers, you know, you're fit. There's no two ways about it. You are fit and strong. And that is it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just funny the way the fitness thing works, and a way again, it's probably like kettlebells and stuff. The way that things were known to work before, it comes back around. It continually keeps coming back around.
Yeah, it is funny too, because like one of the other things that is circling back right now is like, you know, training with, you know, maces and clubs and things, and you know, that's that's ancient.
It is. I mean, there's pottery with stuff like that on there from Greece and India. I don't think I've done enough with them. I sort of get it, and I like the club thing, and I enjoy belting stuff with sledgehammers and like tires and that. That's always good fun.
I haven't learned a lot about you know, club training specifically, it's definitely something I want to try to learn in person, because again, it's like, okay, that's supposed to, you know, there's a fair amount of coordination with it, and you know, it's hard to develop that proprioception, I think, without having somebody help you.
You're moving on a whole different plane of motion, you know, it's it's a crazy movement. You got that thing, the weight down behind you, and you sort of, I don't know, lift, it's almost like a skull crusher, but it's not. And then you're going out to the side a bit, and it's like, what? But yeah, you don't, I mean, you see, you look at some of those Indian wrestlers and that do all that all the time. And I watch a hell of a lot of it. I watch a hell of a lot of Hindi movies, so it's my secret weakness. Okay. But, and so you see a lot of those, and they're massive. They've got big shot. I mean, they're all like fat and stuff, but they're strong and they're big because they just don't do this weird exercise all the time, man.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
To physically pick someone up by their center of gravity, because it's essentially grappling, a bit like sumo wrestling, where they grapple from the waist. So to do that, you have to be pretty damn strong to be able to just skull drag someone off the deck where they're at their heaviest, you know.
Yeah, it's like the craziest sandbag ever. And by the way, it's working it's against
fighting
you.
Your back. Yeah, and trying to hit you. That's another good one. But the Bulgarian sandbags.
Oh yeah, I've not done anything. Have you worked with those?
Yeah, we made. I've actually made them. Made one last year, and I was mucking around with it, and then it got perished because I left it outside. And when I went away, and a dog might have chewed on it or something. Yeah, essentially just out of a tie chew. But I was actually, when I was out shopping today, I saw like made ones, and they were ridiculously expensive. And I thought, you just get a tie tube and some gaff and some tape and paracord and sand and good to go. But they're another weird thing. And smash it.
I think it's good to have some kind of rotational, you know, movements within, because like, you know, with kettlebells and calisthenics, for the most part, we're moving in, you know, fairly straight planes of movement. And it's good to have that other one in there. So, all right, moment of truth. Do you have any kettlebells at home at the moment?
Yes.
Yay. Oh, good.
Yeah, I actually inherited another 12 kilo from a friend of mine the other day.
Oh, cool.
It's an RKC one too, I think. Huh. Yep, sure is. I've got three. I'm not sure, quite sure what I'm going to do with three of them now. But I've got a 16. Just got a 16 of the same guy, and I'm probably getting another 16. So I like doing doubles.
Yeah.
I had to give my other ones all back to the dude who lent them to me. So that's cool. I lose one lot, and then I inherit another lot straight away.
There's 220 kilos in boxes. If I could just kind of like beam those through Skype to you, that would probably be helpful.
Yeah. Well, 20 is a good.
Yeah.
20 is the weird one, because, you know, it's just awkward. And 24s are great because you know straight away, okay, that's heavy, and I've got to work, behave a certain way. But 20s is that in between, and they just everything's not right and throws you around, and it's a little bit too heavy, and then it's not quite light enough to go as fast as you'd like to, and it's 24 you just go, yeah, that's heavy, I'm gonna go this way,
right?
There was a post today, some guy I saw on Instagram, this dude's playing around with a 93. I'm just going, oh. How can you lift that with one hand? God,
it's crazy.
It's just ridiculous.
For the first time I tried to swing 48 kilo, I was over at my friend's house, and I hadn't, this was like maybe 2010 or something, and I hadn't really figured out the fact that, hey, maybe I'll swing this a little bit lower, and at the time I only weighed like 120 pounds at the time, something crazy like that.
Yeesh.
I know. Yeah. So I'm out there in his yard, and all I'm focused on is just like, you know, keeping everything nice and locked in, full lockout at the top. I get the kettlebell up where it needs to be. The problem is the rest of me was not enough to counterbalance it, and I go straight over. And next thing I know, I'm doing a plank on the ground. I'm still attached to the kettlebell. I'm still locked out. The problem is, it's on the ground, and I'm laughing so hard. He doesn't know me well enough to know that I'm laughing my head off. He's like, are you okay? Like, what is that? Why are you this way? And I was like, I'm going to try that again. I don't think that's supposed to. I said, but you know what? Hey, I held the plank, and there we go.
It's probably easier for you, though, because you're a lot shorter than I am. I'm like really tall and got long arms and legs and swinging. When you're doing heavy. Yeah. And the amount of movement you got to put it through, I'm like moving it like twice as far.
Yeah.
Ah, and you get it up there, it's like, okay. Yeah, right. You got to bring it back down again. Great.
Preferably not on your foot, you know?
Yeah. I've nearly done it a couple of times. Gosh, the gym I used to go up the road, they used to, when I was doing snatches and stuff, I'd be scaring people because I'd be doing it with 16s and yelling at it. Easy listening to something a lot more appropriate to what I was doing in my headphones as opposed to what they were playing over the thing and right. Scaring everybody. It was like, what's he doing? Dude, come over here. You're right. Yeah, no, just getting it up there.
Yeah.
Did you hurt yourself? Why are you swearing so much? I like, was I? Sorry about that.
I'm singing along. You never notice. That's funny.
It's a bit because it's a private gym that my friend runs, and he sort of said, I'll look up. You're the only person you can just sort of, other than us, you can just come up there and train. Everybody else just sort of has to have them with them. And so, yeah, it was a bit weird, I think, because it's strange, tattooed foreigner. He likes throwing heavy things and doing ridiculous squats. And I actually got to go up to see him about it again.
There you go.
So I can just use a squat rack so I don't drop anything on me.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
We'll peer pressure you back into the gym.
Yeah, I know. That's it.
Yeah.
I should just send you a list of everything I've got and you can just do something for me.
But yeah, send me a list of what you have. I'll put together something horrible for you to do.
I've done a few. A friend of some guys who they're actually working in security at the embassy in Afghanistan when I was there, and they started a company called Skilled Athlete, and they got another one called Industrial Fitness now. But yeah, they basically come up with a couple of programs for people who live fairly mobile lifestyles, and and it's pretty good. But their weight one they had I did that earlier. End of last year, earlier this year, near killed me.
Oh.
Put on a lot of weight, but it was hard. And because you sort of build up to it, you go through a cycling stage, you get all your movements right, and some of the Olympic movements, I've never really done, and had to get a few people to help me out with that because chucking around that amount of weight above your head is never cool if you drop it. Yeah, but at the end of it, it's crazy how like every day pretty much it was killing me. I'd leave the gym and have to stop and throw up, you know. It was just ridiculous. I don't feel so well.
Wow.
Just lay down. And the other thing it got me was the amount of eating. I mean, that was costing me an arm and a leg in itself.
Just, oh wow.
Yeah, to keep up. But my metabolism is so fast. It's just if I don't do anything, it just burns away. Huh. If I get sick, I recover really quickly. If I want to get big, I eat lots and do weights and I'd get big. It's just weird. But I've got to – it's – you know how hard it is to maintain it and just keep going sometimes. Right. It's like, I need to have a break. I can't keep just lifting stuff all the time. Yeah. It's crazy.
I think I'm following both of those people on
Instagram. Sam's a really good guy. He's they did a fair bit what they could when the various companies they were working for, because the contract changed, but a lot of the guys just stayed with it because one, they were Australian, two, they'd already knew the client and all the rest of it. And so, a lot of those guys helped me out when I was inside, and all sort of, it's how it works with our sort of people.
I guess walk us through, if you wouldn't mind, like a typical homemade kettlebell workout routine that you would have done.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm going to go find a notebook.
right.
All my I actually kept the journals of all wow. this, and but they're all in Australia in a box somewhere now, because after we did the book, I'm like, oh, that's it.
Right.
I don't need to look at these anymore. Okay. I'm gonna have to rain check that out, that question. I'm gonna get them back, because I'm gonna be back in Australia soon. So
oh cool,
I'll grab them then, and we'll go through some of them. Because I mean, even the later on, the body weight ones are actually pretty good. Some of the stuff I got in there, but the guy I was with at that point when we did it here, this Russian dude, he was obviously being Russian, he knew a fair bit about kettlebells.
Yeah.
So his whole thing was just to do an absolute crap load of swings.
Okay.
Like sometimes he could go for an hour or so, and I'll be he's going to break, and he's got to stop. And that, he just keep going.
Wow. Was it continuous, or was he like doing
pretty much? Yeah, he was. We busted it. That's how we ended up busting him a couple of times, because he was trying to swap. He was doing single hand swings and trying to swap hands, but because the handle was basically a piece of cloth through some hose, like in those photos.
Yeah,
it sort of collapsed as soon as you let go of it, it didn't work that well. But he managed to get it a fifth. Most of the time he got it, but a couple of times he just missed it. I now we need another oil bottle. That was his thing. But he, between that and the bars, it was mostly circuits like you do.
Mm-hmm.
You still divide up your body parts into do your legs, do your arms, do your chest, whatever,
mm-hmm.
and just use them to keep the pace going. I mean, there's that one photo of me at that time in there, and I was pretty ripped, actually. I still look at that photo, I wish I was still that fit. That's pretty damn good. It was a pity I was in jail the whole time. But it was, because it was just insane that we'd spend like 2 or 3 hours just doing that.
Right.
And then just eating amazing amounts of rice, because it's pretty much all we had.
Wow.
And that stuff burns up pretty quick. Yeah.
I do hope you get the notebooks. I totally understand, though. You're like, okay, I used these to write the book, and it's time for them to maybe go back in the box.
Yeah, I was actually going to burn them, but I thought, you know what, I'll hang on to them. There's actually some good stuff in there, because I would write down what I trained that day or whatever, I'd also write down anything of interest that happened.
Mm.
And so I've kept track of the dates and that pretty well.
Oh, that's cool.
And I've kept it up for a long time. And that came out of the main reason I started doing it was when the first time was just because I've always sort of kept a bit of a journal when I'm training, but especially when I started doing the body weight stuff.
Mm.
And it says that in convict conditioning and to keep a journal like that. So, that's what really kicked it off, to be honest.
Oh, wow.
It really got it going. So.
That's cool. I was emailed with Paul Wade the other day, and you know, I know there's a lot of conspiracy theories about Paul Wade not being a real person, or Paul Wade being John Duquesne. And I can tell you right now, it's not John Duquesne. John does not have enough time to have written all that.
No,
but I do email.
Sort of got that impression myself.
I emailed Paul Wade after your interview went live, because I'm like, it's like he's got to know about this. Like, I have to tell him about this, especially because you got convict conditioning when you were still, you know, in jail or in prison down there. And he wrote back almost immediately. And so I was like, so he saw it, and I was like, I gotta
tell. Awesome, that's so cool.
Gotta tell Rob the circle has been, you know, completed.
well, to pass it on to him, I kept my sanity because of that book. I think it's. Mm-hmm. I used to trade every day, and then at night I'm just like poring over it, just extract as much information by osmosis or something. I don't know. Just read it over and over again. Yeah. I ended up, I've got all of his books. I mean, and a couple of other ones from Alan Denny as well. But it was pretty awesome to get that sorted out.
And, oh, I bet.
Yeah.
It's funny too, because like Convict Conditioning, the book, you know, the first one especially, you know, I don't feel like there's really been an exercise book that was like that available before. And, you know, plus with all of his mentions of, you know, all the story and whatnot, and a lot of my friends were divided on whether, you know, oh, what are all these prison stories doing in this workout book, you know? And then others were like, oh, wow, this, you know, having this context is helpful. And so it's been interesting for me to kind of observe who goes which way and, you know, like, some of us grew up in Florida and we're like, ah, I get it. You know, I do think the context is helpful with it. And
So we said at the start of this thing, context drives everything. Information is information, whatever, how you take it, or how the context that it is delivered in is what you make of it.
Yeah.
Some people are just not willing to see that. They just go, nah, it's about jail. Nah, no, don't want to know about it. It doesn't fit my little worldview, so no, not looking at it. That's pretty dumb, actually. Yeah.
Well, it's a tendency to avoid any form of like cognitive dissonance or
it upsets my worldview. No, can't happen.
Right. I've always been of the mind of, well, I'd like to be wrong about such and such, you know.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's sort of my thing. I just go, well, okay, if you can offer me evidence of that, let's go. I'm willing to change my opinion, but
right,
you know, just saying no is the wrong thing to say. Why is the right thing to say?
Right, right. I agree with that. It's been good to catch up. I just realized, like, oh, hey, we've actually been talking for over an hour, which is pretty typical for what tends to happen. I keep a training notebook, but it's like a training, and then there's also just whatever happens that day in terms of business or calls or ideas. And so there's this, you know, a stack of notebooks in order, and which can be helpful because, like, oh, wait, what was that idea I didn't act on yet? Oh, there it is.
Yeah, no, I always write stuff down. It's the only way. If I write something down, I usually remember it too. That's the other thing.
Oh, yeah.
I don't need to refer back to it. I write it down and remember it. Mm-hmm. If I don't write it down and I say I'm going to remember it, I never do.
Right.
It's just a weird thing.
It's funny too. If like the physical act of writing, I think, is also an important part of that. Because if I type it, well, it's 50-50.
Didn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sort of saying, because one of the guys on this thing is going, why don't you just keep it on notes in your phone? And I'm like, why would I do that? I don't understand what you're saying. It's not the same. It's just not the same.
I mean, I'll text stuff to myself, but then I write it down.
I do that too. Sometimes I'll read it and go, I've got to remember that.
Right? It's a temporary, like a stopgap between, like, oh no, where's my notebook? Oh, it's on my desk. I'll write this in it later. Text.
We used to do it in the army. Usually a patrol commander, a recon patrol, one of his jobs is he patrol diary every day. And it's kept going during the day, you know. It's like you just put in a time. And for usual things like sked timings and that, when you call coming in on the radio to pass stuff on or get updates or whatever,
right?
It's you keep all that in there as well. So everything's all in one place, as well as the SIGs log that he has for messages in and out. So, but the patrol diary is also stuff like weather and just things they saw, things that might be of interest, things that might be they can pass on, you know. And it just gets so ingrained into you. So afterwards, you see something, I'll write that down.
Right.
But I do it now. I mean, I've sort of got back in the habit of when I think of something that's interesting or might make it into a something I write later on. It's a pretty cool turn of phrase. I'm going to use that.
That was the other thing I wanted to ask you about. When we last talked during your interview some time back, you'd mentioned, you know, thinking about getting more into writing fiction.
The fiction thing is interesting because, again, I spoke about Bram Connolly, a friend of mine who's a writer, ex-Special Forces officer in Australia. He gave me some pointers on it because a lot of his first book in particular was based on one of his trips he did overseas.
Oh.
And so if he, and it's funny because the first time I read that, I'm going, wow, I know who that is. I'm like reading through it and just know it and knowing who the individuals are in the book and cracking up because he's described them and their personalities so well. Mm. But talking to him I did the podcast with him afterwards and we're just having a bit of a chat about how to get into it. And, you know, if you do this, take the notes. Sort of base it on something you've done before. Mm. And that was part of the thing with when I was doing the Seventh Circle is it's like, okay, you know, I've done so much. You can make it a couple of at least another 200 pages of just me being shot at all the time. But, you know, that gets a bit boring.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially it. You remember all these little details of stuff like that and things that happen and it can just crop up somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a funny thing is when I was a kid and I'd read books like that, the fiction that's about a particular place which is real, or especially a place that I know, and it's like, you know, you want to go there and make sure all the details are right. It's like, I see how good this guy really is.
Right.
And there's a few writers that actually do that and really do their research well.
Huh.
There's others that just make stuff up and it annoys me. Yeah. But I'm like that with movies too. I see movies about Cape Town. I'm going, that's not right. That's not where that is. It annoys me.
Yes.
The embassy's over the other side of town. God damn it. It's just weird. You know.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. I mean, that's part of the reason I've sort of been stumbling a bit the last sort of. I was a bit done, and then I sort of go, yeah, it's not good enough. That's not right for a start. I've got to check that out, and I'll go on some massive tangent trying to. By the time I get to the end of it, I can't remember what I was supposed to sort out. Now I'm just completely lost. So I've got to leave it for a bit, and go, okay, that's right. I remember now. Come back to it,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'll get back into it. I mean, it's sort of I've got an idea. The story's in my head,
mm-hmm.
but it's how I want to do it and the direction I want to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a bit of it is still getting some of the knocking some of the dust back out of my head too. You know, mm-hmm.
yeah.
Not that I'm suffering at all. I think I managed to deal with the whole thing pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
But occasionally I still get woken up at night with something that shouldn't be there, or I don't know. It's just a bit weird. So the writing sort of helps a bit getting it out.
Yeah. I was wondering about that because,
and
it seems like that would be very helpful. At least it's kind of like, okay, this is the order of things. This is when what happened where, you know.
Yeah, I've actually said it before to a few people. Was it therapeutic? It did really help. So well, it was cheaper than a shrink because they actually paid me to do it. But being helpful, oh, no, I don't want to think about it. You already go over it again, and then going over the same thing again and mm-hmm. again to get the, and then when the editing process, doing it again, and this is killing me.
Right,
I don't want to deal with it.
I did wonder about that in terms of like you know, going out to an editor and coming back, and you know, I've edited a couple of books myself, and it's you know, the nonfiction, non-narrative, non-true story type of thing. We're just very.
Yeah.
You know, kind of cut and dried sort of fitness stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And even with that, you know, a lot of times the authors are like, oh, I got to read through this again. I'm like, yeah, you got to read through this again.
Mm. Yeah, it's not pleasant.
No. And if it was emotionally charged text that, you know, things you're remembering that happened, I can imagine that would get extra
change. It's sort of a bit, yeah. And even now, I mean, you know, I went through that thing so many times and people ask me a question. Like, and then that chapter when this happened, and I'm like, oh. you're going to have to enlighten me. I can't remember what was there. And okay, I know what you're talking about now. Yeah, right. Let's go into a bit more detail. But
Have all the page numbers memorized? Come on.
Oh, no, God. I've got a friend who can do that.
Oh, yeah.
She's probably actually memorized the whole book. She's actually in the book, so yeah. She's
there you go. You just refer the questions out to her and she'll be right.
Yeah, she'll tell you the page number to go to. To even tell you what what people, everyone was wearing in the room that night that that particular incident happened. And she's like, she's 90% recall, I reckon. She's got. It's insane. It's really weird.
Yeah.
I mean, and you said this, and then you said that, and then stop it. Stop it. You're scaring me. it's really weird.
It's like, we like you, but you're not invited to come over and hang out during this party. No. That's funny.
She's good, Valley. She's actually very, very cool. Had a cool job once. Whole other story.
Oh, boy. For next time.
It's funny some of the conversations I've had, though, since I've been back, because again, it comes that whole thing with perception, and people think you got to be a certain way. It's like, how are you supposed to be? One experience doesn't make up the sum of a person, you know. You got to look beyond that.
Where are the best places for people to find your book, and also to Instagram? And then, of course, I'll put the link to your interview and everything. But what's the best way for them to get their books?
All right, so my Instagram is RobLangdon319, and the best place to get the book at the moment, if you're outside of Australia, it is on Amazon, and the book's name is The Seventh Circle. Actually, if there's anyone who's a publisher in the US who's listening, I'd love to get it into the US if anyone's that interested, because people always get in hold of me and going, "Where can I get your book?" So
yeah,
I'm not a library. Amazon, I don't know. Keyword search, I don't know.
I'll put some links below. Fair warning,
that's cool.
To people, like, I ordered my copy from Amazon, and I think it was shipped from New Zealand. And
it's bizarre.
Yeah, anyway. It was super bizarre. Took a while. Worth the wait. I'll order this book. I'll get it tomorrow. I'll interview Rob for Dragon Door. And 2 weeks later, the book showed up. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is, oh boy. All right. It got here.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, we'll continue to keep up with you, of course. And
No worries. If you ever want to do another one of these again, this is always interesting.
We have an infinite amount of crazy topics to discuss.
Just write some down and throw it out at me just to see where it goes. That's probably the next song.
That's really good. Better way of doing it. We didn't even get into like lock picking or anything.
I know.
Next time. Gotta cut it off.
Training tip of the week. Something I really wanted to get across at the Kettlebell Get Up Intensive Seminar this weekend was the importance of building good habits. One of those habits that can translate into long-term safety and strength is lifting light kettlebells with the same technique as though they're heavy. Unfortunately, it's pretty common for extremely strong, even record-setting lifters to get injured in an everyday activity picking up something relatively light. I do my best to always use correct lifting technique, no matter if I'm picking up a kettlebell that might be very light for me. I also feel like this is an important example to set as an instructor. People will do what I do, and I need to make sure I'm doing the right things. It's kind of a big responsibility, and I don't take it lightly. Book of the Week. It's an audiobook this week, though the link I've included will lead you to all available formats. The book is Go Wild, Eat Fat, Run Free, Be Social, and Follow Evolution's Other Rules for Total Health and Well-Being by John J. Ratley and Richard Manning. This book was recommended to me by John Duquesne, the CEO of Dragon Door, who has more than a few dietary and exercise habits in common with me. I'm pretty sure this book is also effective in written form, but these past few weeks have been so chock full that I've taken to listening to audiobooks between tasks, while driving, etc. to keep up. Go Wild presents some very compelling arguments against the current mainstream lifestyle out there. And also, full disclosure, it gives me some scientific justification for more than a few of my own lifestyle quirks. Find out how you might be able to enhance your own well-being by making a few simple lifestyle and eating changes. While the description of the book on Amazon sounds pretty dry, the presentation is compelling and will hold your interest. If you're consuming books and ideas faster than I can toss them out every 2 weeks, you may wish to also sign up for John Duquesne's new Sunday Share newsletter. Visit johnduquesne.com, that's johnduquesne.com, for details, and get me some brownie points by telling him the GearYaGirl.com podcast sent you. That reminds me, speaking of cool things that John has recommended, this coming week will be the 6th week that I've had 8 meals delivered from Factor 75. I've been incredibly impressed with the flavor, quality, and of course nutrition with this ready-to-eat meal delivery program. If you'd like to give it a try for a $40 discount, see the link in the show notes. Factor 75 meals are always grass-fed, pasture-raised, preservative-free, antibiotic and hormone-free, soy-free, gluten-free, and non-GMO. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the GearYaGirl.com official podcast. Be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss the next episode in 2 weeks. If you like this podcast, please leave a review on iTunes. You can also support the show by visiting GearYaGirl.com or KettlebellsOfficial.com. And any purchases you might make through the links on those sites help this show with no additional cost to you. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I'll see you again in 2 weeks.